Hello and welcome to another all-new Salt and Light Hour. I'm Deacon Pedro.
And Magnus asked this boy, Edward, you know, like, what are your dreams? What do you want? And he was struck, I think, by how simple the request was that, you know, the boy didn't want to be hungry and he wanted to be going to school. Wow. So it was really the bringing together of those two things and, you know, not being hungry and also that chance at an education. That was really the seed that started, you know, in that one school in Malawi and started the whole movement of Mary's Meals today.
That's our guest, Aaron Prattley of Mary's Meals, an organization that feeds some 3 million children at school every day in some of the poorest communities in the world. Aaron will be joining us very soon to tell us more about Mary's Meals. And after that, Danny Torquia is back with his Media Ministry Minutes series. He's going to give us some tips on how to limit the amount of media that your children are consuming at home. As always, this is very relevant to parents. So be sure to stay and listen to my conversation with Danny Torquia just after we learn all about Mary's Meals. And then
we go to Mass and it can be just going through the motions, but like the reality of Christ's fullness and his presence there should blow our minds, right? But because he veils himself so that it doesn't overwhelm us, it can feel really normal and sometimes even stagnant, but there's a glorious reality happening behind the veil at every single Mass. And so Christmas is the same way. Like if we stripped it down to just being there with him, he is worth the wait, right? That's what Waiting Well is all about.
That's Ali Elia, our featured artist of the week. Ali has been on this program many times and she has a few new singles that she wanted to share. And so we thought we'd reconnect and speak about Advent and waiting and also some of these collaborations that she's been doing with other artists. That's Ali Elia in our second half hour, so be sure to stick around. And also be sure to download the Salt and Light Plus app. That's the best place to listen to the show and not miss one single episode. Okay, so let's start with a song. Here's Ali Elia and Epic the Band with Hark. Listening to Ali Elia with Hark. And singing and playing along with Ali is Epic the Band. We're going to be speaking with Ali Aliyah at the end of the program, so I hope that you can stick around for that. Mary's Meals is an organization that was founded in 2002 that provides more than 3 million children a day in some of the poorest communities with a nutritious daily meal in the place where they receive education. It's a very simple idea that not only provides children with food, but it keeps them in school. To tell us more, I am now joined by Aaron Prattley, Chief Programs Officer at Mary's Meals. Aaron, welcome to the Salt and Light Hour. It's so good to meet you.
Thank you. Lovely to be here.
So, I mean, I've given a little bit of information so far about Mary's Meals, and I think that our listeners are a little familiar of the work, but what would you say in is the best way to explain the mission of Mary's Meals?
Yeah, well, the mission of Mary's Meals is really simple. It's to provide a meal and a place of education for children in some of the poorest communities around the world.
Okay, and so just to clarify, so it's not just providing a meal, but a meal at a place of, and I always find it interesting that you say a place of education rather than at school.
Yeah.
But most of those places are schools, I imagine.
Yeah, most of those places are schools. The reason we don't say schools is sometimes when you think of a school, you think of, you know, my children's school or children's school kind of in North America. Whereas, you know, for Mary's Meals, because we're working in really poor communities, sometimes that's, you know, school under a tree. Sometimes, you know, that's in a place that you wouldn't think of as a traditional school, but really where there's education taking place. And that's where we want to be serving our meals.
Right. And the idea then is that this is an incentive so that the children go to school?
Yeah, it's an incentive for children to enroll in school because sometimes parents, you know, need that incentive when children could be making a living and earning a wage for very poor families. And it's an incentive to stay in school. So a lot of our research about our impact has shown that, you know, a hungry child, they leave. They try to, you know, go find a meal somewhere. Mm-hmm. So they're getting that meal at school so that they're actually staying for the entire school day. They're showing up every day.
Right. And not only are they going to school and staying for the whole day, but they're actually in a better state to actually learn because they're not hungry.
Exactly. Because, you know, it's really hard to concentrate on anything when you're hungry.
Yeah,
so we're really getting them what we call ready to learn, right? They're there, they're full, they're ready to start learning.
Right. Now, tell me something, and I forgive me because I probably, when I've spoken to the founder, Magnus McFarlane, many times, and I probably have asked him this question, but I don't remember. Is something that would have started from the beginning, or was it something that you discovered as an organization that it's good to not just feed the children, but actually feed them at the place of education?
Yeah, and that really gets to sort of why we started doing what we are doing now. And that's Magnus, who was in Malawi, and he was speaking to a young boy who was about to, unfortunately, become an orphan. His mother was, you know, had AIDS and, you know, was going to be passing away. And Magnus asked this boy, Edward, you know, like, what are your dreams? What do you want? And he was struck, I think, by how simple the request was that, you know, the boy didn't want to be hungry and he wanted to be going to school. So it was really the bringing together of those two things and, you know, not being hungry and also that chance at an education. That was really the seed that started, you know, in that one school in Malawi and started the whole movement of Mary's Meals today.
Mm-hmm. So it started in Malawi, and it's grown substantially. How many countries and what are you serving today?
Yeah, so it has grown substantially. So in Malawi alone, it's grown to over 1 million children.
Wow.
And overall, we're in 16 countries around the world and over 3 million children. So really, you know, we can thank Edward and Magnus for really starting something that has just grown as a movement globally.
Right. And to be clear, it's 3 million children every day.
Yes. So we feed every day. And it's something we're really proud of to make sure that, you know, children are only going to show up if they know they're getting that meal. So it's one of the things we really focus on is that every single day we're there with that meal.
Right. And you're able to do so in a way that's very efficient. Can you explain how it actually works and how you can keep the cost so low?
Yeah. So, I mean, the first thing is, you know, we really do focus on a really simple meal. You know, because with so much need, you can do all the bells and whistles, but then you're not going to be feeding as many children. So, for example, in Malawi, we have a nourishing porridge that's, you know, enriched with all the vitamins and nutrients that you need. It's a hot meal, which is always, you know, important to have that hot meal. And so, you know, we're able to focus on a really simple menu. We have, you know, we have volunteers in Malawi, those parents who show up every single day to prepare the meal. So we really are based on, you know, volunteers being bought into the importance of this. So all of that comes together to allow us to do this really cost effectively, cost efficiency, have a lot of cost efficiency. And, you know, that's what allows us to do it at such a low cost.
Right. And I imagine also that the ingredients are locally sourced and you're working with local organizations.
Yeah. So we, you know, to the extent possible and in the majority of our programs, we are sourcing everything locally so that we're having that economic benefit as well in those communities and in those nations.
Now, in the last, my sense is that the situation is not improving around the world when it comes to hunger or children suffering hunger. Can you tell us a little bit about that and maybe focusing on some of the challenges that have increased in the last couple of years?
Yeah, for sure. And you're right. You know, it is a really challenging and it's something that really, you know, pulls on our heartstrings to have to make those decisions with mm-hmm. the resources we've got, where we're going to be feeding children. I think even if you look at this past year, there's been so many changes globally to, you know, the international development commitment from governments and from organizations. And mm-hmm. unfortunately, that has meant that there's been, you know, closing of programs and services. And, you know, we've been really fortunate because we do have such a strong grassroots base that, you know, we've been able to keep that promise to the children that we're reaching. But of course, those children are in communities that, you know, are facing a lot more hardships. And, you know, you put the challenges of climate change on top of that, you know, the economic changes. Yeah. It's been difficult for sure for those communities.
Mm-hmm. How do you decide? And I appreciate that you said that it's a very heart-wrenching decision when you have to, you know, figure out where you're going to be able to help. How do you decide where to support? And have you been able to add more countries or more locations, let's say, in the last year?
Yes. And so, I mean, it is a difficult decision. You know, the first thing is we always follow need, right? We want to be feeding those children who need it most. Mm-hmm. And in those communities where there is buy-in from communities, because like I said, we really rely on those communities to be there every day doing the cooking, you know, mm-hmm. to make sure that their children are attending school. So we really need their buy-in. So we have, you know, those things. We want to reach in some of those locations where we know others might have difficulty reaching. So, you know, in some locations, government can do a little bit of school feeding, but it's only really in those urban environments, you know, and we're reaching those remote rural locations where we know that, you know, it's more difficult to reach, but we feel that we can serve and serve well in those locations. And in terms of where we have expanded, you know, you did ask about new
yes.
countries.
Thank you.
And so we did recently add Mozambique as a new country where we reach. We've also in some of those locations where we've seen a lot of need, particularly this past number of years, we've been able to really expand greatly and, you know, invest in those partners that were already doing, you know, small programs and doing such strong work and to expand substantially to meet the need with those partners.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine that some of these places are affected by war and violence, terrorism. And I'm thinking of, I mean, Nigeria or South Sudan. I don't know if you're, I mean, I know you're in South Sudan. I don't know if you're in Nigeria. And even places like Haiti where, I mean, I don't even know how things are in Haiti right now with the gang violence and the unstable government. Can you tell us about some of the challenges and maybe some of the blessings that you've discovered in those places?
Yeah, for sure. And Haiti is a really good example, and South Sudan, another one. I think, You know, the third one that comes to mind for me personally is in the Tigray region of Ethiopia, where they're recovering from civil war. Mm-hmm. You know, in Haiti, we rely on amazing local partners who, you know, really they face those day-to-day risks on the ground to ensure that they're keeping that promise. And I was very fortunate to spend some time with one of our partners. I wasn't in Haiti because of the security, but she was with me and, you know, to talk about it. And she said the most amazing line that's really stuck with me. And she said, you know, during this year, which has just been so challenging for them, you know, we've been able to expand. So, you know, we've reached another 12,000 children with this partner. And she said, you know, we weren't just holding the line to reach those children. We were able to push that line forward to reach even more children during such a challenging time. So it's something, you know, that I think we're really fortunate to be able to work with partners that are so committed to the work that mm-hmm. we're doing and to share that mission and to see the importance of a school meal.
Yeah, I can see how those local partners are very important. As you look to next year, and I'm sure that, I mean, that I don't think the world is going to be getting a lot better in some ways, but in some ways there are also many blessings. Are there any new initiatives or new and more expansion that you're looking for towards 2026?
Yes, for sure. I mean, like I said, we've got lots of plans that, you know, if and as we get the funds to be able to do so, you know, we do have planned expansions. I think, you know, it's going to be a difficult year in a lot of locations. And I think we're also prepared for some uncertainty. I think South Sudan mm-hmm. right now, there's a lot of uncertainty in terms of, you know, the future of, you know, them being able to keep all the schools open. And they've had some recent school closures and have been, you know, quickly reacting and reallocating resources. So part of our work in 2026 is to really work with those partners and those on the ground implementers to make sure that to the extent possible, we're doing what we can do as Mary's Meals to keep our promise so that they can be keeping that promise to children. So that core, you know, keeping that promise aspect is always the first thing that we think about. And then beyond that, you know, we would love to be able to expand to reach more children, you know, mm-hmm. in so many of these countries that we work. We're, you know, ready and to do so. And it's just being able to reach that next child is such a strong focus of ours.
Right. And in order to do that, you need people to support you and you need donations. Can you tell us a little bit how a donation can make a difference and how... I mean, I know what the amount is, the $31.70 Canadian. What does that $31.70 do?
Yeah, so that $31.70 or, you know, in the US, the $25.20 US mm-hmm. dollars, you know, and it's, to me, what strikes me about it and why I just am so bought in personally, as well as, you know, as my, what I do for a living is that keeps that promise to one child for an entire school year. So that child gets a meal every day they show up at school for that price. And, you know, the reason we can keep that cost so low is, like I said, we've got that passionate, committed, on the ground, parents, grandparents, elders in the community, you know, pitching in with doing the cooking every single day. Wow. And those partners who really are, you know, doing the best they can to have as much money as possible go right through to feeding children.
Yeah, I find that so incredible. So $31.70 if you're in Canada, $25.20 if you're in the US, will feed a child for one school year, the whole year. Most of us could do more than $31 a year. So I hope that that's an encouraging word for our listeners. I can imagine you've been around for a long time. I can imagine that maybe there are now adults who were children years ago who benefit from your program. Are there any, maybe one story that you can share? Maybe someone that is now a staff, but they actually benefited from the organization, or a story that you can share?
Yeah, and we do. And it's funny because sometimes that doesn't come to the forefront until you're actually, you know, on the ground. And I get the privilege of being able to visit our programs and talk to staff. And, you know, in Malawi, we have a number of individuals. It's our oldest program. We've been working there for over 20 years. And you know, I was talking to a staff member who was part of sort of a long service recognition because he'd been with Mary's Meals as a staff member for so long. And I didn't know this, but, you know, in the course of a conversation, he's like, well, of course, you know, I received Mary's Meals. And, you know, and it was the fact that he used the word, of course, I received Mary's Meals, that just struck me that I'm like, yeah. I didn't know that. But like, what a powerful thing for me personally to know that, you know, that was the impact, that he's now a staff member and that, you know, of course, he received Mary's Meals to be able to get that education, to get to that point, and is now, you know, really giving back as part of his work.
And what a better message of success than someone who's benefited, who's gone on to, you know, get further education and now wants to work for Mary's Meals and also do the same for so many others. Thank you, Erin. Is there anything else that you think our listeners should know in terms of how they can support or that you feel that they should know?
Yeah. And I mean, I think the only other thing is that, you know, of course, we really appreciate, you know, donations, but we also, we see ourselves as a movement, right? Mm. So, you know, we've got individuals who, you know, regularly pray for Mary's Meals and that's, you know, how they're contributing. We've got those who volunteer for Mary's Meals, you know, in so many different capacities. And so, you know, although, you know, of course, funds help feed children, it really is, you know, that broader awareness and movement that's so important to us as an organization as well.
Yeah, thank you for mentioning that. I didn't even think of that. Obviously, prayers are always good. But yeah, for volunteering. So would there be opportunities for someone in Canada or the US to volunteer that does not involve traveling to one of these countries?
Yes, and that the majority of our volunteers actually are volunteering locally. You know, they're speaking to their church groups, their schools, their communities, spreading the word.
Okay, so then that's great. So then they should go to the website, marysmeals.org, find out more. And as you find out more and you decide to support financially, maybe you can also decide to become an ambassador and volunteer and do further work. Erin, thank you so much for spending some time with us today to tell us about this wonderful organization and how we can support your work. Thank you so much. And I guess I should say a blessed Advent season and a Merry Christmas.
Yes, and thank you so much.
To learn more about Mary's Meals and support their work, go to their international website, marysmeals.org. Once you're there, you can select the country or region where you are. marysmeals.org.
I'm Mark Hargrave, and you're listening to the Salt and Light Hour with Deacon Pedro.
Visit us at slmedia.org to watch all our programs and to find out how to support our ministry. slmedia.org. And now it's time for Media Ministry Minutes with Danny Torquia. Danny, welcome back to the program.
Hello, Deacon, my good media missionary friend.
Yeah, I am so excited about today's episode because I'm so with you. You're going to give us some tips, right?
Well, I guess you last time we were in the clouds talking generalities, the threats, the opportunity, the need, and now we're going into the nitty gritty. You want to go into my household? Is that what I understand to see what we do?
I do. Okay, I do. Well, but wait, before we go into your house to see what you do with your kids, because can you just remind us quickly? So what we were talking about last time.
Yeah, last time we painted a picture of what many, if not most, families know, which is that there's hungry, not hippos, but marketers, and we're not judging their intention, but really, I know because I work with marketers, that really a lot of the people I work with, their intention is erroneously to kind of keep the customer or the consumer or the potential customer-consumer perpetually on their backs, feeling inadequate, and they don't want you to find adequacy and grace from God.
Right.
But it on their product.
Yeah,
or
of
their
course.
Service. Okay,
of
so course. We've got to be candid with everyone. And so there's a threat because they want addicts. And to be an addict, very good addict, you have to have an inadequacy and a feeling of not enough.
Yeah, that's, you know what, we could,
material.
Yeah, that's so good. We could probably spend the 10 minutes just talking about that because I don't think people realize it, that the marketer wants to sell, obviously. And in order to sell, they need to keep your eyeballs on their product. And they will perpetuate that feeling of inadequacy. Like, you're too fat, so buy these jeans. You're a right. loser, so get this car.
Right.
You don't have any friends because you don't have hair, so you should buy this product, right? So that's the logic.
So now, in terms of how can you then work out your salvation, right? It's a big term.
Well, you're responsible for the salvation of your children. So let's talk about what you do. Okay. I want to go into your house and you're going to, because you have four kids ages like 10 to 17 or something.
Right. Pretty spot on. And now this is where we have to, number one is we have to explain, before I go into the top 10, I got top 10 for you, Deacon.
Oh, yeah.
But before we go there, we actually have to explain this to them. Otherwise, if we do not explain to them our mode of parenting, they're going to think we're nuts.
Okay.
So we explain to them these very theoretical forces we just talked about. No joke. They know about the forces in the free markets.
Yeah.
But then let's look at the top 10. Number one is we have one TV in the house.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
And we hide it. We have to hide it behind a cabinet, you know, so that when people come in, it's not the central piece of art hanging on a wall, 52 inches or 40 inches.
So
it's
good.
Covered by a cabinet.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's ours is in the basement in the family room. So it's not even anywhere near anyone. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So we try to cover it, but whatever is good. If it's there, it just should be off most of the time.
Yeah.
Number two is we obviously limit the time that we watch TV together. So when the kids were younger, we might have not watched TV or consumed media 4 days out of the week. But now that they're all older, the TV is on every day, but maybe for an hour. So limit your TV time or media time. Mm-hmm. Number four is the cell phones. We want to keep them in a specific charging area or resting area, all of them. So it's near the TV for us. It's a table that has plugs. And when they're not using their phones for like a purpose, the smartphones should be resting there, including mine.
So even like when you go to your room to go to sleep, the phone stays on that table. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, the children are not supposed to bring their phones to their bedrooms, and they don't.
Yeah.
Then in the car, which is an interesting one, is we said no phones in the car except exceptions. Now, there are exceptions almost
every
day.
Yeah, yeah, you know, GPS.
Kids, 5 minutes, they come into the school. Our kids go to school, a local school, so... Okay, they're on their phone for a few minutes when they reacquaint themselves with their phones. Mm-hmm. Okay, but then they know that in the car, general rule, you don't look at your phone in the car, because it just actually it's manners. It feels insulting if I'm driving people around, driving Miss Daisy, and no one's talking to me.
Right.
And no one's communing together. We're all physically in a captive, small quarters. So it's more of a manners thing. That's like one of the tips.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then we movies. When it comes to movie night, we love movies. We're not banning movies from our home.
Yeah.
We research every single movie we watch. And I mean religiously. Even the religious movies or the Hollywood, Bollywood, whatever, wherever you want to watch the movies from. We research them using stuff like Plugged In or Common Sense Media or Tomato This, Rotten Tomatoes, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then I don't know if you notice this, you know, sometimes you watch a movie, but then this kid picks up his phone and now he's watching a movie with his
phone.
That
I don't get. Yeah.
It's like,
I don't get that. It's like, watch a movie with a phone in your hand. Yeah. Makes no sense.
We don't tolerate that. If you're watching a movie, you're present to the movie and to the others. If not, you know, we're going to stop and you do what you got to do on your phone.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
One movie at a time.
Yeah.
And then... When we go to restaurants, you know, same thing as in the car, right?
Yeah, of course.
These things don't come out. And we try for no phones in the bathroom. We got to say, okay, these are all difficult.
Oh,
no phones in the bathroom.
That's a good one.
Yes.
No, that's a good one. I'm telling you. We just have to make sure we have lots of magazines and newspapers and little books, bathroom books in the bathroom. If people need to do some reading, don't read your phone. They're going to drop the phone in the toilet one day and then they'll learn
And the last one, I don't know if I'm at 9 or 10, but one of them that I learned recently from a bishop online, mind you, that said the best thing to do is to fill up your time with heart-filling activities.
Yeah,
meaning,
that's so good.
If you're gonna put all these bans on what not to do, tell me what I should be doing. Well, what you should be doing is 10 minutes helping your sister with she's practicing volleyball, spend 10 minutes with her.
Yeah.
Doing an extra chore today because I got to do this with the yard. Do this today. Go call your grandfather. Go learn a language. You know, I'm from Quebec. So maybe practice your French so you can speak to your grandparents in Montreal.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also volunteering, of course, right? And writing, maybe it's media ministry. Maybe it's going online and being aware,
it's
open to speaking
so good.
To someone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But like, fill your heart with what your heart's meant to be filled with.
Yeah. I'm going to copy these and put them on the Salt and Light Hour episode page so that if people go to our website and they find the episode, they can find the 10 tips to keep the limited media in your home.
I guess a healthy media diet.
A healthy media diet, yes.
Yeah, and then we should talk next time about what can we do to be proactive missionaries.
Yes.
Because sometimes my kids see me on my phone and I tell them I'm doing ministry. And they understand that I'm on Facebook or on a channel or on a WhatsApp group doing religious or faith-based, wholesome outreach. And they should do that too.
Yeah, you're right. And if they see the parents not on their phone all the time, that will trickle down. I am a firm believer of that. And it starts from the time that they're babies. Maybe even before they're out of the womb. Danny, this is great. I mean, we don't have time today, but maybe next time we could, because I'm curious to know how your children's friends, when they come over, what kind of, how all these rules go by. So we're going to talk about that
next
time.
We'll talk about that.
Yeah, for sure.
And also, if you know, it's never too late to start these practices, even if I'm a grandfather or, you know, if I'm babysitting or visiting. And these rules are obviously in my home, right? I can't really transfer these easily to my visits to other people's homes.
No, well, you can. You make sure that your phone is not, you're not sitting and yeah, exactly. I'm definitely going to keep these in my home as a grandparent for sure. Danny, thank you so much. These are so good.
My pleasure, DK.
Like I said, I'm going to post them on our website so that people can find them easily. Danny, have a blessed end of the Advent season and a Merry Christmas to you and your family.
Thank you. You too. I appreciate it. And to all your listeners.
Danny Torquia, the managing director at Torquia Communications and Dialogue and Grace. You can find out more at dialogueandgrace.com.
As we prepare our hearts this season, there's a beautiful way to share Christ's love in a real and practical way. Mary's Meals brings daily school meals to children in some of the world's poorest and most remote communities, reaching more than 3 million children every school day. These meals don't just fill stomachs. They encourage children into the classroom, where they can learn, grow, and begin to climb the ladder out of poverty. If you're looking for a gift that reflects our call to serve with compassion, you can give one with true purpose. And the remarkable part, it costs just $31.70 to feed a child for an entire school year. It's a simple act that makes a profound difference. To learn more or offer a meaningful gift this season, visit marysmeals.ca and join us in bringing nourishment, dignity, and hope to children around the world.
Coming up in our second half hour, a conversation with our featured artist of the week, Ali Aliyah, so don't go anywhere. Welcome to the Salt and Light Hour Part 2. I'm Deacon Pedro.
Well, I've always loved Let All Mortal Flesh Keep Silence. I think it's such a beautiful ancient hymn. And I love the minor key. You know, it's just very beautiful lyrically, especially in this time of Advent. And so I knew that I wanted to record a version of that. And I had been playing a version live for some time before I came to Nate, and we decided to work on something together. And so he was up for producing it. And in the process, you know, it kind of, again, takes on its own life as we both put our own vision and heart into it.
That's our featured artist of the week, Ali Aliyah, speaking about an Advent song she recorded. And the Nate she's referring to is Nate Reinhardt of Sonar Worship. In a bit, we're going to be hearing from Ali Aliyah, who's going to tell us how she celebrates Advent and also about a few singles that she has released recently. But before that, let's listen to that Advent song. Here's Ali Aliyah with her single, Let All Mortal Flesh Keep Silence.
Let all mortal flesh keep silence, and we blessing in his hand. Christ our God to earth descended, our full homage to demand.
Listening to Ali Aliyah with her single, Let All Mortal Flesh Keep Silence. We met Ali Aliyah in 2018. At that time, she had two albums, Jealous Love and The Labyrinth. When she's not writing or recording, Ali is leading worship or doing music for Father Mike Schmitz or going on pilgrimages with Jeff Cavins. I spoke to Ali recently, and I started the conversation by asking Ali the most inappropriate and annoying question since she just celebrated her first wedding anniversary. I apologize in advance, but Ali didn't seem to mind. Can I ask you a personal question? So you just got married last year.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, congratulations. I guess your first anniversary. How's married life?
Oh, it's great. It's awesome. My husband's amazing. And he's a great roadie and drummer, actually. So I rope him into playing with me a lot. He's awesome.
Okay. Oh, really? That's fun. If he doesn't mind being bossed around by you.
Well, I don't know who does the bossing. Sometimes he tells me, you got to practice, Allie. You got to get your music in. So he's great.
Is that how you met? Because he's a musician?
Yeah, actually. Yeah. I had a youth rally event that I was singing for at his church, and my drummer that I had planned to play for that event couldn't make it last minute. So I told the client that I'm so sorry, we don't have a drummer. And she said, no worries, there's a guy here who plays. And so she plugged my husband in, and I forgot about him for like a year after that. But then when I came back, he reintroduced himself and we reconnected.
Oh my gosh, that is such a great story.
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
Would you consider yourself a solo artist?
Yeah. So I have a bunch of different musicians, all incredibly talented musicians that kind of live all over the place in little pockets of the world. And so depending on the event and availability and things, I'll plug different people in for each show.
And then as a solo artist, I want to talk to you about a few collaborations that you've done recently. Yeah. Is that something that is new for you, or have you always co-written or worked with other artists as you're composing or writing new music?
No, primarily, yeah, it is kind of new. New as in the last few years. So
yeah.
Primarily I write my own music, but then there've been certain scenarios where I'm like, oh my goodness, there's like this really talented musician that I would love to work with, and we learn from each other. So then we have some sessions, co-write some stuff, and put out some really cool things that it's really beautiful, because then we create something to get together collaboratively that neither of us could have created exclusively on our own, and just becomes something really, really beautiful.
Yeah, that's what I've heard before from other artists about collaborations, that you'd end up with something that you would have never ended, and that makes perfect sense. So is it as easy as, I mean, I don't know, you're like, oh, I'd love to work with, I don't know, Epic the Band, and you just pick up the phone and say hi. It's like, how does that work?
Yeah, I guess with, so you mentioned Hark with Epic the Band. We put out that song, the cover of Hark the Herald. And I don't remember exactly how that happened. I know that we were aware of each other as musicians in, like, it's a small world, and especially a small Catholic world, right? So we knew of each other, and I think we probably connected over social media, if I'm remembering correctly. Yeah. And you know what it was? That year, it was the pandemic year. And so there was a lot of,
there were a lot of collaborations that year.
Yeah. Because like we couldn't, have events in person, and I still wanted to do some things that were creative. So I connected with them over social media and asked if they wanted to do a song together, like a co-release. And they presented Hark as the option that they loved. And so I was like, absolutely. So we recorded that one and came up with our version of it.
Yeah. Okay. Tell me more about that, because Epic, I would have, had you asked me, like, who should I collaborate with? I don't think I would have ever thought Epic. Like, your styles are so different. So yeah. What drew you to want to work with them?
Yeah, well, I really respect what they're doing. And I've been following their career, and they're just beautiful souls. You know, they have a heart for the Lord and for worship and for people and drawing people in through their music. And they're really fun too. You know, like they're just really good at what they do. And I think there's a beauty in working with people who are different from you, especially like, you know, in different styles with music. Like I mentioned, like we can create something together that neither of us could exactly create on our own because of our differences in style. And they're really cool. So I was like, hey, let's do this. And they're up for it.
And I know, I mean, if it was during the pandemic, it probably was virtual, but would you ever have collaborations where you actually meet in person, like do a co-write in person?
Yeah. Yeah. I've done that a couple times. So actually you mentioned, my husband, we have another song called Aurora that we just recently put out, and that song is about, long distance dating him, my husband, and I co-released that one with an amazing artist named Brett Winters, who's a local talented musician. And, so that was an in-person collaboration. And also with, Little Mortal Flesh, I collaborated with Nate Reinhardt from Sonar Worship. We did that one. Mm-hmm.
I was going to ask you about collaborating with Nate, because again, Sonar, completely different style, completely different sound. Mm-hmm. So how did you connect with him?
Yeah, well, so Nate's been an incredible mentor over the years.
Okay.
All of Sonar has. They're just amazing. So as I was growing in my music ministry, they provided a lot of opportunities for me to sing with them at the different conferences and things. And now I sing with them for the Steubenville Youth Conferences, because Caroline, the lead female singer, retired. She's so incredible, big shoes to fill. But so now I sing with them.
Okay. I did not know that.
Yeah. And so Nate and I, we decided to put out Little Mortal Flesh, and he produced it. So he added a lot of really interesting music elements to the song, which were super fantastic, you know, like very
well fun. Again, I always find that traditional hymns, the what should I call it, it's an arrangement, I guess. Reinterpretation of what was that conversation like with Nate? It's like, hey, let's write a new song, or let's repurpose a traditional song. Like, how did you end up with that particular title?
Well, I've always loved Little Mortal Flesh, Keep Silence. I think it's such a beautiful ancient hymn. And I love the minor key, you know, it's just very beautiful lyrically, especially in this time of Advent. And so I knew that I wanted to record a version of that. And I had been playing Aversion live for some time before I came to Nate, and we decided to work on something together. And so he was up for producing it. And in the process, you know, it kind of, again, takes on its own life as we both put our own vision and heart into it. So he created some really cool elements.
Yeah, it is. I was going to say it's an unusual, maybe it's because I find that all Advent songs, it's like everybody, you know, it's like if you ask people about Advent music, everybody knows O Come Emmanuel and everybody knows O Come Divine Messiah. And then kind of like that's where the list ends. And there's so many beautiful Advent hymns that maybe we just never get to hear. And that being one of them. So it's nice to have a fresh take on it. Maybe there's an Advent album that's brewing in there in the Ali Aliyah collection, no?
Yeah, well, actually, it's funny you mention it. We're so Brett, who I mentioned earlier, he is producing a full Christmas album for me. So, I'm touring right now. I'm in the middle of a tour with those songs that will be on the album for next year's Christmas record.
We're speaking with our featured artist of the week, Ali Aliyah. Now, Ali has worked with Father Mike Schmitz for many years now and often writes music for him. Recently, she wrote a song for him for this year's Advent series.
Yeah, last year, I do a lot of events with Father Mike for youth camps and conferences and different kind of retreats and things. And so at the youth camp that we both work at in the summer, last year he approached me and asked me to write a song called Face to Face for his Advent series last year. And then this year he asked me again, he said, I've got a new Advent series coming. Can you write me a new one? And so basically what happens with those is he has like these recordings and like these ideas for the Advent series that he's going to be producing with Ascension. And he gives me all these draft ideas and basically talks me through of like, yeah, here's what each week or each episode is going to look like. And then I sit with all of that and I pray with it and I just kind of start crafting different ideas out of that until the song becomes fully formed. So this year it was Waiting Well is the name of it.
Yeah. And I've heard Father Mike speaking about how we don't know how to wait. So can you tell us a little bit about kind of the main, I guess, message of the song is, or in the way you interpreted it for the song?
Yeah, absolutely. So Father, he asks the question in the series of if we woke up on Christmas morning without any fresh snow, without the presents, without the decorations, the lights, the cookies, the sights and smells and sounds that we associate with Christmas, if all of that was gone and all we had left was Jesus, would that day still be worth celebrating as Christmas Day? Because we get so caught up right in all our to-do lists of the busy Christmas season. And I got to buy these presents. I have to like set up my Christmas tree. I have to do all these things. But we forget to just pause and focus on what's important in life, what's precious in life, the people around us, and knowing like this reality of Jesus is coming for you and me this Christmas season. He loves you specifically, wholeheartedly, and he wants your whole heart. And we get so easily distracted by all of our to-do lists, all the busyness, but to wait well for this Christmas season, right? Because Advent is the season of waiting and preparation. To wait well really just means to remember what's important in life and focus on Jesus's birth and coming for us.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose intellectually I would say, yeah, of course, if there was nothing else and just Jesus, of course it's worth celebrating. But I mean, to imagine what that would look like, and my mind goes to the Mass. And at every time I go to Mass, like there's Jesus present in the Eucharist, the Adventus, I mean, in the sense of the presence, right?
Right.
And we just take it for granted because, I don't know, I mean, you know, like, but every Mass should be like Christmas morning.
Yes, exactly. That's where my mind went first. Well, when Father approached me about this song, because, we go to Mass and it can be just going through the motions, but like the reality of Christ's fullness and his presence there should blow our minds, right? But because he veils himself so that it doesn't overwhelm us, It can feel really normal and sometimes even stagnant, but there's a glorious reality happening behind the veil at every single Mass. And so Christmas is the same way. Like, if we stripped it down to just being there with Him, He is worth the wait, right? That's what waiting well is all about.
Yeah, absolutely. This is like my reflection every year at Advent. And I love that the church gives us the gift of Advent, that we're constantly forcing us to, you know, like, I'm very good at not putting out any decorations except Advent lights, because I have my purple and rose, the Advent wreath, and like nothing. But it's so difficult, so difficult. So maybe there are some listeners that they're listening to us talking and they're thinking, yeah, I really struggle with this. How do you try to bring all this together in your home during Advent, Allie?
For our own Advent traditions?
Yeah.
So every year is a little bit different and we're still kind of like figuring that out since we're still newlyweds with our own Christmas traditions, because the last 2 years we've done this Christmas tour at this time. So it is, again, it's a busy time. So I've
exactly
in realizing like I wait very not well. Like, I'm really bad at waiting, especially in this Advent season with how busy it is and how short really the season is. It can feel, I remember being a kid and thinking like Advent's so long. I'm just like, and I was bad at waiting then. Right. But, now it's like so short because it's just like, man, everything's moving so quickly and it's hard to take that time to just pause and reflect on again, what's important. And, so this Advent series has been great for me on a personal note, just to like pause and be like, okay, yes, even though we're busy prepping all these gigs for these tours and trying to like plan for when to be with family because our family lives in different places, so we have like a lot of traveling and all the things, the series has been helpful to just kind of like reset every night and do the reflections. But as far as like traditions, Mass of course is always like the at the forefront for us, going to each Sunday and just getting to spend time as well with family and again reflecting on what's important.
That's important too. So good advice there to, you know, find my pastor gives every Advent and Lent too, he finds little booklets where people, it's like, take these home. And then every day you have a reflection. So to do something, and whether it's Ascension Press with Father Mike or whatever else resource that you can find, so that you're not just kind of going, without any direction through during the season. Any big pilgrimages? I know that you were doing some pilgrimage.
Yes.
Leading? Anything coming up next year?
Yes. So, I have been to the Holy Land with Jeff Cavins and Father Mike a few different times, I think 6 times now. And this year in January, we're going to go to Egypt. So I'll be going to Egypt with Jeff Cavins.
With Jeff Cavins?
Yeah, as the worship leader. So sing over there as well. So looking forward to that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds so much fun. I find that every time we talk about the pilgrimages, it's too late for people to register because I presume that's already set. So you need to let us know, you know, for 2027 when the next pilgrimage is.
I know there are other pilgrimages on the radar. You could just keep following jeffcavins.com for the new ones as well. We have another one that is scheduled, I believe, in May or June.
Okay. So you would do...
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, that sounds like fun. Maybe I can join you one day. I'd love to go to Egypt. That sounds like a good one. Yeah. Okay. Well, Ali, it's so much fun. And so I'm to speak with you always. Good to see you. Thank you for the music. You're always so good at sharing your music with us. And thank you for sharing a little bit about your Advent traditions with us.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you for the conversation. It's always good to talk to you as well.
Yes. Well, take care. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. God bless.
You can learn more about Ali Aliyah at her website, ali-aliyah.com. And Aliyah is A-L-E-I-G-H-A, Aliyah, ali-aliyah.com. Here now to take us out is Ali Aliyah with that song that she wrote for Father Mike Schmitz, Waiting Well.
fresh fall of snow. No lights, no decorations, no Yuletide blaze aglow. If everything were lost and all that I had left was you, out of everything I ever wanted for Christmas, you're worth the wait. You're the sweetest gift that I anticipate.
We're listening to Ali Aliyah with her single Waiting Well, and that will take us to the end of the program. Remember to download the Salt and Light Plus app. That's the best way to not miss one single episode of our show. It's also where you can watch all Salt and Light Media programs, TV series, and documentaries on demand. Be sure to tune in for our Christmas special next week, featuring, I'm very excited, the Daughters of St. Paul. It's going to be a very fun show. Sister Marie Paul Curley will be with us. I hope that you can be with us too. So that's our Christmas special next week. Today, let's continue to pray for peace in the world. Let's pray for the victims of the Hanukkah shooting at Bondi Beach in Australia. Let's continue to pray for Ukraine. Let's pray for children who go to school hungry and children who can't go to school because they have to work. Let's pray for parents who are navigating the world of media. And I pray that you all have a wonderful end of this Advent season and that you have a joyful Christmas. Thank you for being with us today. I'm Deacon Pedro, and this has been the Salt and Light Hour.